I'm Alan Rees, the dental business coach, and this is the Incisal Edge podcast being recorded on Friday, the 6th of March 2015. The title of the podcast is Indemnity Fees, Where is the Ceiling? I have a client who's been qualified as a dentist for 30 years. He's skilled, dedicated, talented, and knowledgeable. I would happily be his patient if the need arose. He accepts referrals from other practitioners for endodontics, implants, and tricky restorative cases. He's recently completed an MSc in endodontics and is currently two-thirds of the way through an MSc in implantology. He's doing these higher qualifications not just to improve his clinical skills, but to ensure that he is up to date with contemporary teaching and thinking on the subjects. He practices a dentistry at a level that is way above average. Here are his indemnity charges for the past 5 years and the current year. There's been no change in his circumstances or prescribing patterns, and no claims for at least 6 years, and none that relate to his provision of high-value dentistry. In 2010, he was paying £2,940. This rose by 58% in 2011 to £4,656. A further increase of 13% in 2012 saw it reach £5,276. A hike of 26% to 2013, and he was paying £6,628. The relatively modest 5% saw him paying £6,995 in 2014. This year, an eye-watering, by anybody's standards, increase of 51% has seen him being asked to pay £10,570. Over the 6 years, that's a 3.5 times increase. Now, he's canny enough to know that he'll have to load these figures into his budgets, adjust his fees accordingly, ensure his marketing engine is oiled and efficient, and get on with life. He also acknowledges that were he in plastics, neurosurgery, or obs and gyne, the cover would be far higher. But what has prompted me to write this are two questions. How has this state of affairs in UK dentistry come about, and where are we on the road to permanent change? My thoughts, for what they're worth, conclude there may well be a perfect storm in dentistry, and possibly the rest of healthcare. The contributors include politicians. This is not an anti-politician rant, but it is quite apparent that repeated dabbling in health, education, and so on have not led to marked improvements. The interference with health started with the Thatcher government in 1979. With reforms and attacks on the professions. An example of one small but significant move was the removal of consultants' dining rooms. In 1990, after a decade of small changes, came the internal market, giving rise to competition in healthcare still hated 25 years on. The mantra that the market will decide somehow can't work with the NHS. The NHS itself. Is it a football to be kicked about? Is it a pig in lipstick, the colours varying according to which party is in power? Or is it a religion, as it is according to one of Mrs. Thatcher's chancellors, Nigel Lawson? And as such, you are not allowed to criticise it. Certainly it's a source of misinformation and fudging, especially with regards to dentistry. Two new contracts in 1990 and 2006, with a third on the way, have done nothing to improve things. Dental education seems to have been taken over by the NHS. The preparation for general practice appears to lag a generation behind the reality. Open borders have resulted in an influx of dentists from other countries in Europe, where the situation for them is worse. More pressure on the labour market means that associate fees are forced down. See Thatcher and the market. The TLAs. These are the three-letter acronyms. So, the GDC has proved itself to be out of touch and overbearing. A generation ago, it was viewed with respect, and there was a confidence in its abilities. Now it acts like a cane-wielding headmaster, whose default position is to flog first, second, third, and never to listen. Advertising for business has meant that it has sunk to the level of ambulance chasers and placed itself in the role of an adversary to the people who pay through the nose to keep it in existence. The BDA has done little to truly integrate with its constituents and hides behind committees, the decisions of which bear little relevance to the day-to-day existence, challenges and fears of its membership. For too long it seems to have been afraid of its own shadow and has lost years through the distractions of its legal status and constitution. The DOH, the Department of Health, does things in its own sweet or not so sweet way. See politicians and NHS. We must include the Care Quality Commission, the CQC, in all this, but I'm not going to talk about them here. The DPS, the DDU, and the MDDUS are having to play catch-up with the numbers of cases that are arriving at their doors. Their subscribers' fees, remember, this started about their fees having to be hiked to cover spiralling costs. IDH and other corporates have had a significant influence on provision of dentistry, mainly, but not exclusively, NHS. Lawyers. It is said that in the 60s, large numbers of politicians were economists, and the economy went down the pan. Since the Blair government came to power in 1997, there have been lawyers in government by the score, and the legal system often appears to have been built for the legal profession rather than its users or victims. This might not really be new. Jarndyce and Jarndyce was based on a case from 1853. Health and disease. The patterns of disease have changed. The flood of rampant caries of the 50s, 60s and 70s seems to have abated. Perio is still not sexy, either in education or practice. The heavy metal generation of baby boomers who were born and then indulged by parents as sugar came off rationing are able to do something that their parents could not, and that is to keep their teeth for life. But like the full mouth rehabs of the past, their care is costly and limited numbers of dentists are able to perform it with sufficient skill. Without the next generations having the drilled and filled mouths that need to be maintained, what will dentists of the future do? Add to this mix the use of higher trained ancillaries, hygienists and therapists, and stir the pot. Fashions or fads. From wall-to-wall veneers, through the cosmetic boom, including Botox and fillers, and on to another TLA. That's STO, or short-term orthodontics. Now it seems that after a weekend course, you can become an orthodontist. The practitioners are usually well-meaning, or sometimes desperate, to keep their businesses afloat, and are promised much by the purveyors of systems. But of course, these suppliers have something to sell, and have no responsibility for what is done with their appliances. It's totally understandable that people will make mistakes, either through ignorance, enthusiasm, or a combination of both. The rise and rise of STO cases leading to complaints, plus those of the far more intrusive techniques of implantology, the last but continuing big fad, are threatening to derail completely the indemnity market. So, there you have it. I have no solutions except some that may be unpalatable, but are, so I gather, being considered within the NHS. This means that there will be tiers of dentists who are limited in what level of dentistry they can provide. It is being done by the NHS for financial reasons, without a doubt. But what difference might such an approach mean in private practice? Well, perhaps a decent career structure and path, rather than the ad hoc system that now exists, would make sense. That, of course, brings further questions. Who'll decide who should join the path? What power will they have? How will proper mentoring happen? A very big question, where does the money fit? At the moment, an associate 12 months after qualification in the NHS, or straight away in private practice, is valued at the same amount as someone who has 30 years of experience and an armful of qualification. That doesn't happen in any other profession. When I raise this subject, the responses vary. Of course they do, because it depends on the circumstances, the age, the experience, and whether the person is a practice owner. One thing is clear. Dentistry needs to get its house in order, and by that I mean behaving like a profession that takes responsibility for its actions across the board. However, the attacks from the organisations that I've listed above mean that dentists are disunited, poorly represented, often run their businesses like school tuck shops, and persistently act like ostriches with their heads buried in the sand. Perhaps the market will decide. There may well be widespread unemployment. Dentistry may become devalued and will cease to be a career of choice. Whatever happens, it will be painful for some. It could be that these indemnity fees are not really large compared with how they will be, and that they will continue to rise and be seen as just another cost of doing business. And that will have to be passed to the customer. I'm Alan Rees, the Dental Business Coach, and you've been listening to the Incisal Edge podcast. This was a Penglass production, and the music was provided by Night in Caro. I'll be back soon with a more upbeat topic. Goodbye.